On our last day together I will take you there, he replied, again in a hushed tone of voice, as if he was imparting a most important secret to me and was concerned that someone else might overhear what he was saying. But that is still some time from now, and today we have other things to concern ourselves with, he quietly said. What's on the agenda for today? I asked with a sigh, trying my best to conceal my disappointment with the fact that he hadn't told me the location of the perfect snowboarding mountain. I immediately knew that there was no way I could leave the Himalayas and Master Fwap until I had snowboarded this perfect mountain. Master Fwap had masterfully hooked me, and what I found to be most frustrating was that I had baited the hook myself. What is the most important aspect of snowboarding? Master Fwap asked me. Balance, I replied quickly. Exactly so, he exclaimed. While I couldn't see his face in the semi-darkness of the cave, I could tell by the tone of his voice that he was smiling. Balance is also the most important aspect of living. I say that it is the most important aspect of living as a way of focusing your attention on balance as a topic. Naturally, every part of living is important, he said in a much louder voice, having evidently decided to give up his pretense of secrecy. But without balance in your life, nothing else will work, he continued. Just as, in snowboarding, without balance you will fall over, in life, without balance you will never be happy or successful. Life is complicated, Master Fwap explained. It is only simple on television or in the movies. But for purposes of this discussion, let us say that the goal of life is to be happy. It is the primary motivating force for the vast majority of human beings' actions and decisions. All other decisions and actions that people make are subordinate to this. You choose, from among the experiences that life has to offer you, he continued, those which you feel will make you the happiest. It's important to remember this. In snowboarding, the purpose is to glide down the mountain on your snowboard without falling off. If you lack balance, then you won't be able to do this. In life, happiness is achieved through balance. Naturally, the kind of balance I'm discussing is inside your mind. Certainly, it's a good idea to try and create a happy balance in your physical life too, he remarked. But because of the constant uncertainties and the ever-changing circumstances in day-to-day living, it is not always possible to achieve perfect physical balance in all of the activities in your life. It is important to try, though. Your efforts to create a balance in the activities in your physical life will maximize your possibilities for achieving happiness. What is inner balance, Master Fwap? I inquired. To be honest with you, I really have no idea what you are referring to. I appreciate your honesty. That is why I will give you an honest answer. Inner balance is happiness. But wait a minute, I interjected hastily. I thought you just said that inner balance creates happiness. Now you are saying that inner balance is happiness. How can it be both? I don't understand. Have patience, my young friend. Hardly anyone on this entire planet understands this point. That is why we have hiked all the way up to this cave, because here you may gain an understanding of what inner balance and happiness are, and how they can be attained. If we had this conversation elsewhere, I sincerely doubt you would understand very much of what I will explain to you today. But Master Fwap, I protested. How is it that only a few people on the entire Earth, out of billions and billions of people who inhabit our planet, could understand this? I mean, aren't there lots of really happy people out there? But you are right, in a sense, he continued. There are certainly many people who do experience happiness from time to time. But their happiness is usually short-lived, because it is dependent upon the outer circumstances of their lives being in accord with the fulfillment of their desires. To understand this, you must first know the difference between a hierarchical and a relational mindset, Master Fwap explained. Master Fwap, not only do I not know the difference between them, but I don't even know what they are. Would you please explain this to me in snowboarding terms? Yes, of course, I would be most pleased to, he replied. There are five basic ways to approach snowboarding, or anything else in your life for that matter, Master Fwap began. There are also numerous combination approaches, which blend different elements of these five basic approaches. What are they, Master Thwap? I inquired. The first approach to snowboarding, he began, is the instinctive method. This is the least effective of the five. Using this method, you allow your body's basic cellular instincts to guide you. Which instincts do you mean? I asked. Fear, pleasure and physical balance, he quickly responded. You are willing to learn to snowboard, and go through what is necessary to do so, because your body anticipates a pleasurable experience from snowboarding. You use your body's fear to keep yourself from getting hurt, and you also use your body's innate sense of balance to stay on your board and negotiate going down the mountains of snow. The second method is the passionate approach. In this method, you use your desires to prompt you. In the passionate approach, your ego guides you and your passions empower you. This is the machismo method. So you mean that you do it to show off? I asked. Yes and no, he replied. That is certainly an element in this approach, but there is more to it than that. In the passionate method, you are validating your self-image through your conquests and achievements in snowboarding. You will most certainly combine this with the instinctual approach. In your travels, you must have met other snowboarders who employ this method. Sure I have, I said with a grin. I call it the jock syndrome. Those geese snowboard just to prove to themselves, or to other people who are watching them, that they can be radical. It's very much an image thing. And a lot of them are very good snowboarders, too. Exactly, Master Thwap replied. They physically enjoy the feeling of snowboarding, and they use their fear, their sense of balance, and their ego's self-assertive need to achieve, in order to impress themselves and others. Their passions drive them to accomplish more than the purely instinctual snowboarder does. Right, I said. Guys and women like that like to swagger when they walk. They think they are better than other snowboarders or if they can pass them on the downhill. It's not really a spiritual thing for them, if you know what I mean. Indeed I do, he responded. Now, the third approach is the irrational way. It is not really a method at all. It is dominated by anger and uncontrolled aggression. People who use this approach will skip over the preliminary lessons and instruction about how to snowboard, and just do it. They will also probably end up in a hospital, or put someone they run down in the hospital along with them. Right on, Master Thwap. I agreed heartily. I hate those dudes. They are completely unfocused. They just grab a board and try going downhill. Every time they fall off, they just get angrier. They usually end up quitting or getting themselves or somebody else hurt. They are bad news from start to finish. I don't even know why they bother. I know what you mean, Master Thwap, I said. I once saw one of those geese smash a snowboard to pieces when he couldn't ride it. He kept yelling that the board was no good. But the board was fine, he was his only real problem. Now that the more evolved methods of snowboarding are the hierarchical and the relational methods, Master Thwap explained. These two methods of snowboarding represent the Western and Eastern approaches to life and to problem solving. They are mental approaches, as opposed to the physical or emotional approaches of the previous three methods I outlined. Both the hierarchical and relational methods, he continued, rely on the intelligent uses of structures. The primary difference between the two methods, however, is the way in which people who use them arrange, interrelate and put those structures to use. To understand these two methods, you have to know the difference between Buddhism and Christianity. Why is that, Master Thwap? He laughed and said, it has to do with circles and straight lines. These are respectively the symbols of the East and of the West. What do circles and straight lines have to do with snowboarding? I asked impatiently. I was getting the feeling that Master Thwap was about to launch into another one of his mystical dialogues, and that somehow the answer to my question was going to get buried in one of his metaphorical avalanches. He chuckled at my impatient tone of voice and then, without losing any of his elegant Buddhist composure, continued with his explanation. Hierarchical and relational thinking are both extensions of religious viewpoints, he said. While Buddhism is not as strictly practiced as it once was in the East, and Judaism and Christianity are also not practiced as strictly or widely as they once were in the West. The types of thinking that they respectively engendered in the Eastern and Western cultures remain relatively unchanged. Hierarchical thinking stems from the Christian belief in the great chain of being. In the Christian religious view, God is at the top of the universe and the devil is at the bottom. Everyone else exists at different levels, according to how divine or undivine they are, in between God and the devil. Dante, along with many other Christian writers, helped make the hierarchical view part of the mainstream of Western thought and philosophy. According to this Judeo-Christian hierarchical way of thinking, Master Schwab continued, creation began at a specific point in time in the past, and the end of the world will occur at some specific point in time in the future. Everything is linear in this mindset, and time and space occur in straight lines. He continued, these two very basic concepts, along with the idea that man is born in a state of corruption and sin and is in need of redemption, created a physical and metaphysical cosmology that influenced the very structure of the Western people's languages, philosophies, methods of thought and analysis, problem solving and, of course, their social value systems. In other words, people in the West, unless they are irrational or intuitive, tend to think in straight lines. Let me give you a snowboarding example. A hierarchical snowboarder snowboards in a straight line, Master Schwab explained. He begins at the top of the mountain and snowboards straight down it. When he reaches the bottom, he stops, and then he ascends the mountain again and repeats the process. But Master Schwab, I interrupted, how else can you snowboard down a mountain? You have to go with gravity, unless someone can levitate like you can. Yes, he replied. What you say is true. Unless you can levitate, this is most definitely the case. But you interrupted me before I had a chance to finish my explanation. What does that mean in practical terms? I asked. Why, it means that the data constructs in his mind move fairly slowly, not a good thing for such a fast-moving sport, I would think. Master Schwab, I said with renewed exasperation. I don't have any idea at all what you are talking about. If this cave is supposed to make things more clear, it isn't working very well. Are you sure we are in the right location? HMM? Oh yes, thank you, I am quite sure. But you must be patient and let me finish. I am just getting to the practical part. You see, he continued with what I hoped was a sympathetic chuckle for my frustration, it is hard to imagine thinking in another mode when you have thought in a particular way all of your life. What we are really discussing is how we remember things, how we connect things within our mind, and how we prepare for and anticipate things. This is how your mind processes information. It connects ideas and feelings in a particular fashion, and then it sorts them into patterns and matches them. It can do so in and through a hierarchical, a relational or an irrational framework. Relational thinking is based on circles, Master Schwab continued. That is how Buddhists see the world, as a series of endlessly interconnected circles. We don't believe in God or in the devil, at least not as they are commonly conceived in the eyes of Westerners. We also don't believe that time is linear. Instead, we believe that God and the devil, good and evil, and all the pairs of what you would call opposites exist inside your own mind. And we don't feel that these things are opposites at all, as a matter of fact. We view them as complementary. As Buddhists, we believe that time occurs in cycles, that the entire universe is one big circle, and that many smaller circles and cycles are contained within that larger circle. Needless to say, both the hierarchical and the relational cosmologies and views of life are slightly off the mark. They are both attempts to define existence in a way it really cannot be defined. As an enlightened Buddhist master, I am not concerned with cosmologies, Master Schwab digressed for a moment, only with the effect that they have upon the way we think, and the way that we construe data. So, to answer your question, he continued, a hierarchical snowboarder takes longer to think things through because he must connect all of his thoughts in straight lines. A relational snowboarder can think faster because he thinks in circles, that is, He doesn't have to go through as many time-consuming thoughts to make relevant connections between the things he thinks about and perceives. Master Fuap discusses lines and circles. For example, Master Fuap said, "Let us say that we have placed a great deal of information along a straight line. Now, if we are at one end of the straight line, and the piece of information we want to get to is all the way at the other end of the straight line, it will be necessary for us to journey all the way through the information that is in between us and the piece of information that we want to access in order to reach it. But suppose we took the same data and arranged it along the circumference of a circle, and then let us further suppose that we sat down in the middle of that circle of data. Now, all of that information would be equidistant from us, because it is arranged along the circumference of the circle that we are sitting in the middle of. If we want to get to a particular piece of information, we don't have to go through a lot of useless data to get to it. All we have to do is reach right out to the edge of the circle and grab it. Obviously, this is a much quicker and more efficient way of accessing information. Take snowboarding, for example. Suppose. You are correct," he replied. "But although you may not snowboard in circles, you can think and perceive from the center of the circle." "What do you mean by that?" I asked. "By not thinking at all," he replied. "But what good would not thinking do you, Master Fuap? If you weren't thinking when you were boarding down a mountain, you would probably end up killing yourself, wouldn't you?" "Not at all. That is what relational thinking is all about. It is perceiving things from the still center inside your mind. Normally your thoughts and perceptions are linear. You have to think things out in a long, cumbersome fashion in order to arrive at a proper conclusion." "But that's what deductive and inductive logic are all about," I protested. "That's exactly my point," he continued, unfazed by my emotional outburst. "Logic is a hierarchical way of thinking. Whether it is deductive or intuitive is irrelevant. It really boils down to the same thing." "What's that?" I asked hesitantly. I was getting more and more frustrated as he continued his explanation. I still didn't understand how any of this related to snowboarding. "I see you're losing your patience with me again," he replied. "Well, this isn't really that hard to understand. Just assume that logical thought and reasoning normally move in a straight line. Say, for example," he continued, "that you are snowboarding down a strange mountain, and suddenly a Buddhist monk appears directly in your path. Logically, thinking in a straight line, he shouldn't be there at all. What on earth would a Buddhist monk be doing wandering around in the snow on a Himalayan mountain? Instead of relationally thinking, with which you would have instantaneously reacted to the situation without logical analysis, and thus would have avoided hitting the monk, you hesitate for a split second because your logic cannot account quickly enough for his unexpected presence on the mountain. Now, if you were thinking relationally, which would mean that you weren't thinking at all, your body would react instantly and you would avoid hitting the monk," Master Fuap continued. "Whether the monk's being there was logical or illogical wouldn't be an issue that you would have to think your way through, in order for you to react. You wouldn't lose that split second it takes to get through your logical analysis of a situation. You wouldn't hit him, and thus you would avoid all the bad karma that comes from snowboarding over an understanding, enlightened, Buddhist monk." Master Fuap paused. Even though I could not see his expression in the semi-darkness of the cave, I was sure he had a self-satisfied grin on his face. "Master Fuap, how is what you just described any different from instinctual reflexes? In what way is this relational? Also, isn't not thinking when you are snowboarding basically the same thing as being unconscious?" Master Fuap defines the center of the circle. Before answering my question, Master Fuap was silent for several minutes. I assumed he was pondering how he was best going to answer my questions, or perhaps he was considering how he could simplify the subtleties of Buddhist wisdom for a rather abstruse American snowboarding fanatic. "This is not as difficult to understand as it might seem at first to you," he resumed. "The main problem you are having is that you are being a little too serious. You need to relax your mind and let the luminous energy of this cave help you understand all of this. In short, you are paying much too much attention to my words and missing the yogic point that they are directing your mind toward. One of the great secrets of life that Buddhist monks have learned from their study of meditation, Master Fuap explained, is how to eliminate anything extraneous from their minds. If something doesn't contribute to their happiness and well-being, or to the happiness and well-being of others, they are able to remove it from their thoughts, and keep their minds focused on what does matter. While you are plummeting down the mountain on your snowboard, your mind normally would be thinking of many different things. You might be remembering something irrelevant, you might be anticipating something unnecessary, or you might be focusing your mind on exactly how you are doing what you are doing. For most people, at any given time, it is usually a mixture of all three of these things. The relational way of doing things is to move your mind to a fourth condition, a condition of heightened awareness. In a condition of heightened awareness, you elevate your conscious mind above the stream of extraneous data, out of dimensional time and space, so to speak, and you meld your mind instead with the pure intelligent consciousness of the universe. When your mind becomes absorbed in this higher level of intelligent consciousness, which I refer to as the second attention, your mind will automatically access and create new relations with the data that you require, at any given moment of your life. This is the center of the circle of intelligence. In this condition of inner illumination, you will always know exactly the right thing to do or not do, at exactly the right time. Unlike using a hierarchical mindset, you won't have to think your way through a great deal of data to understand things. You will simply know. Ultimately, thinking is a very inefficient method of processing data. But Master Fuap, I almost shouted in sheer frustration, you're not making any sense at all. I thought the shortest distance between any two points at any given time was a straight line. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't, he calmly replied. Well, when isn't it? I nearly yelled out at the top of my voice in frustration. Consider a road that goes up to the top of a mountain, he calmly responded. It winds its way up to the top of the mountain in a series of loops. If you made a road that went straight to the top of a mountain, it would be too steep for vehicles to climb. So, in theory, while the shortest distance between two points may be a straight line, in reality, sometimes a circle, or a series of circles, is shorter. I didn't answer. I could understand now the benefits of the training in Buddhist debate that Master Fuap had received growing up in the monastery. I remained quiet, silently acknowledging his point, and let him continue. The issue we are examining, Master Fuap continued, is about thinking relationally. As I said before, most people think in straight lines, when they bother to think at all. And naturally, you do understand, my young friend. I am certainly not suggesting that we all give up thinking and return to a purely instinctual way of perceiving things. My point is that there is a much more advanced way of looking at life than you are familiar with. It is a way of perceiving life and data that is much more accurate and enjoyable than the method of logical analysis which you are used to employing. Logical analysis, Master Fuap continued, is fine for gaining a limited understanding of many things and situations. But the speed, accuracy and range of computations that it offers you, as a way of thinking over and evaluating real-time experience and situations, is definitely inferior to relational analysis. Yes, I always carry it in my pack in case it gets dark on the way back from snowboarding. Good, take it out for a moment, turn it on, and point it at the ground in front of us. After I had done as he requested, Master Fuap spoke again. Now suppose we take a set of numbers. Let us arrange them into rows. Let us arrange the first row like this, he said as he drew this set of numbers in the snow, from 1 to 12. And suppose we draw a second set of numbers that looks like this, he said, and drew a second set of numbers, underneath the first set, that looked something like this. Now logically speaking, he went on, the best way to relate these numbers is in a straight line, either from side to side or up and down. Then Master Fuap drew some lines in the snow between some of the numbers that he had written that looked something like this. One line with 1 to 12, Another line below with 13 to 22. But suppose we arranged the first group of these numbers in a circle instead, he said as he made a circle out of some of the same numbers that looked something like this. The upper row or line with 1 to 12 where lines connects 2 to 16 in the lower line, and 7 to 14, and line between 9 and 19, and 11 and 18. And now let's make another circle using the second set of numbers, inside the first circle, he went on. And then he drew a second series of numbers in a smaller circle, that fit within his first circle, that ended up looking something like this number circle. It is the outer circle with numbers from 1 to 12 and the inner circle with numbers from 13 to 22. Now, as you can see for yourself, he continued, the ways of connecting the numbers are much more direct than before, when I was interconnecting the numbers that I had placed in the two straight lines. And he proceeded to draw a number of lines connecting the numbers in the two circles that looked something like this. You're right, Master Fuap, I said. The lines connecting the numbers in the two circles are much shorter than the length of the lines connecting most of the numbers that are in the two straight rows. But what does this have to do with snowboarding? It is our Buddhist belief, he continued, that the human mind, as I once told you, is made up of countless layers, which I have represented with circles. Think of your mind as being similar to an onion. An onion is made of hundreds of layers of thin skin. When you take the outermost layer away, another layer is revealed. There is layer after layer, as you peel your way down to the onion's core. Your mind is made of thousands of layers in a similar way, Master Fuap continued. That is why I compare it to a series of interconnected circles. But Master Fuap, I broke in. How does any of this relate to snowboarding? I was completely exasperated at this point with all of Master Fuap's metaphysical jargon. I didn't see how any of what he was saying was at all relevant to answering my question. It's easy, he said, suppressing a laugh as he spoke. I will explain it to you. Be patient with me for just a few more moments. Okay, I acquiesced, but please relate it this time to snowboarding. When you are thinking, you are caught in a straight line, he began. In order to get out of the straight line of thought, and reach a point of information that is not in the current straight line of your thoughts, you need to bridge your information gap with additional straight lines of thought. For example, let us suppose that you are snowboarding down a mountain. You are engaged in the types of thoughts that you normally think while you are snowboarding. Perhaps you are gauging the snowbank ahead and preparing to turn. When suddenly, and without warning, you see a Buddhist monk standing in the path of your rapidly descending snowboard. But if you are not thinking at all, he continued, if your mind is absorbed in the second attention, and you are able to make extra logical connections within your mind with immediacy, then you will react smoothly to this unexpected occurrence and avoid hitting the poor, unsuspecting, Buddhist monk with your snowboard. If you are thinking in straight lines, however, as you were when you first met me, then you would hit the monk, just as you did. You hit me, Master Fuap continued, bringing me back mentally and emotionally to a moment I would rather have forgotten, because your mind couldn't draw a rapid enough series of relations between your snowboarding down a mountain, and a Buddhist monk you unexpectedly found standing in the path of your oncoming snowboard. Now consider this as an example from real life, not from theoretical life, he declared. Buddhists, you see, are the ultimate realists. We like theories, but only if they have realistic applications to actual, day-to-day or lifetime-to-lifetime circumstances. In day-to-day life, he said, you are constantly dealing with the unknown. Yes, there will be a certain amount of repetition in most people's lives. For example, you may go to school each day at approximately the same time and follow the same route. But one day, something may occur on your way to school that was quite unexpected, something that you could not have anticipated would ever possibly occur at precisely that moment. Perhaps a car swerves out of control and suddenly bears down on you, or perhaps the most beautiful girl you have ever seen suddenly walks past you. If you were thinking logically, in straight lines, at the time, you would probably not react quickly and correctly to what was happening to The most successful people in the world are those who think relationally, Master Fuap continued. Of course they can use hierarchical logical analysis too, when it is beneficial for them to do so. But most highly effective and successful people don't rely on hierarchical logical analysis for most of their problem solving. Instead, they solve problems relationally with the assistance of their second attention.